Support for the Closing Market Report comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at agrigoldgiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for December 9th, 2011. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And also this half hour, we'll share part of the testimony of former MF Global CEO John Corzine. He appeared yesterday afternoon before the House Agriculture Committee and was questioned on his role in the collapse of MF Global in October. We'll feature the questions and comments of House Agriculture Chairman Frank Lucas and Illinois Congressman Tim Johnson. And we'll look at agricultural weather with Illinois State Climatologist Jim Angel. It's all on the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Here's how futures settled on this Friday afternoon in Kansas City. March wheat, 661.5, up 3. May, 670.25, up 2 and 3 quarters. At the board of trade, December wheat, 573.5, down 3 and a quarter. March, 596, down 1. And May, at 617 and 3 quarters, down 1. December corn, 585.5, down 4.5. March, 594.25, down 6. May, 603, down 5 and 3 quarters. July, 609, down 5.5. September 575 down 6 and 1 quarter. January soybeans 1107 down 25.5. March 1116.5 down 25 and 3 quarters. May 1127 down 25.5. July 1137 down 25.25. August 1137.5 down 24. And September 1135 down 23. December soybean meal 275.50 down 720. January 276.90 down 740. December soybean oil 49.34 down 86. January 49.60 down 85. December live cattle 118.30 down 112.5. And December lean hogs 85.40 up 57.5. And that's Friday's settlements in Kansas City and in Chicago. Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's South American weather highlights, he says the most important part of the South American forecast is to keep in mind that there is no excessive heat predicted. In fact, most areas will see below average temperatures, and that will conserve soil moisture through slower evaporation. Areas to watch for dryness besides northern and some central Argentina locations include Paraguay, western Mato Grosso do Sul, western Paraná, and southwestern Rio Grande do Sul, as well as Uruguay. The bottom line in South America warrants greater rainfall, but crop stresses will be somewhat manageable for a while because of the lack of hot weather and at least some showers in the first week of the outlook. Subsoil moisture is also still favorable in many areas. Second week rainfall potentials will increase in western Argentina after December 16th and may reach eastern Argentina and possibly southern Brazil after December 20th. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, we look at the marketplace on the close of the week, and we see that wheat and soybeans both took it on the chin, but corn stood in spite of all of that.
Well, the corn stayed lower, but you're right. I think it was mainly on the bean weakness. If the beans could have come around a little bit more, Dave, and not closed only about 7 or 8 cents off their lows, I think they probably would have been able to give the corn an extra boost, because Kansas City wheat came around. That brought Chicago wheat to down only a penny on the close and settlement in Chicago for March. So if beans could have done a little bit better with crude oil turning around and heading back towards $100 a barrel, I think you could have probably seen maybe steady or even positive price action in the corn. I think that would have been a very nice thing to see.
And the wheat leaves, as I was suggesting, significantly down on the wheat.
Yeah, and I think this is where it goes back to. Wheat has been down five of the last 6 weeks, and wheat has been a really tough nut to crack right now when it comes to getting a bottom in place. Seasonals would say that you're there, but today's report would say you're not, because the 878 million bushels of domestic ending stocks were above the highest guess, 208.5 million metric tons of global ending stocks above the highest guess, major exporters production up 2.4%, just this month, and you have a situation where you're pounding more and more supplies into the market that essentially the Ukraine and the former Soviet Union had their exports reduced, but Argentina and Australia more than offset that and ended up being a net increase of major exporters' available stocks.
And increasing in feed wheat, too, yes.
Indeed. And so, but I will have to say, when the wheat came back to where it was only down a penny, and earlier in the session, the French milling wheat actually closed up a little bit, I think that has to be watched, because, like I said, the seasonals look very good during this time period in new crop July wheat, based upon the last 5 to 6 years and the average that they do tend to try to turn around by mid-December. The UBS, the Dow Jones UBS grain index, that weekly chart closed right on its trend line. So we didn't do any technical damage, even though we were down once again for the fifth out of 6 straight weeks in the wheat market.
So if the prices hold in here at this week's lows, are you suggesting that we might see the beginning of that seasonal technical turn higher?
I think it goes back to the currencies again, Dave. I'd really like to see the currencies jump on board. I mean, right now the Dow Jones and the S&P are making new highs. They're looking very good. Like I said, the crude oil is up near $100 a barrel again. The copper came back and rallied sharply from their lows. What I'd really like to see is the currencies turn, where the dollar, you know, forcefully goes back below that 78 level and the Dish Euro tries to retake 135 to 136 to possibly give us that chance where we can get by the end of the year some real serious volume and some buying. I think a lot of traders are looking for that after today's close because of the way the week closed. It goes back to, can we follow through? And I think that's where momentum really means a lot when we come back Sunday night.
Can you make a fundamental argument for the dollar moving lower?
I can. I think that the U.S. dollar right now in the short term is not a good safe haven to come into. And I think that the European crisis has been more than priced in at this point, because the bond spreads in Italy and in Spain and those countries that have been a problem this past 5 to 6 weeks, they've come down precipitously. So the need for a safe haven dollar mindset, I just don't see it in the short term. So, yeah, in the short term, the next month to 60 days, I think the dollar is not a buy here fundamentally.
Where does MF Global sit in all of this in terms of its effect on the futures market at this date?
It goes back to the psychology of the trade, Dave, and it goes back to it. I would put the MF Global issue up there similar to what we're dealing with in Europe, and if a major country in Europe would leave the EMU and leave the Eurozone, I think that's where the psychology of the trade right now is pricing some of that in. I think the psychology of the trade and seeing the weaker volume, partially due to MF Global, in my view anyway, and based upon some of the traders I've spoken with up there in the last 5 to 6 weeks, I think that you've got volume and psychology keeping potential longs on the sidelines. And then it goes back to, until we get a resolution with the EU crisis and the EU Union comes together on their fiscal unity, and until we get a real hard number of what's missing in MF Global and how they're going to make up that difference and get that money back to the clients, I think the trade will continue to be very, very tender-footed in terms of buying into the market.
Will they remain tender-footed unless they see 100% of return on their losses?
Boy, that's a tough one. I think that that's where it goes back to the timing. If they would say you're going to get all of your money back, but it's going to take, you know, 6 to 9 months, I got to think that that probably would be okay with investors as long as there's a steady stream flowing back to the liquidity. But, you know, you and I have both read a lot of articles in the last 2 to 3 weeks how this has really damaged the credit lines and the availability of liquidity for producers and elevators to be able to operate. And so money needs to stream relatively quickly in order for it not to do more long-term damage.
You were over in France giving a talk. What kind of things did you learn on your trip that would be useful to farmers here?
Absolutely amazing that the psychology over there was nearly identical. The grain company I went and did a meeting for and did a conference with I went to their offices after the conference, and it was absolutely amazing. They talked about the USDA corn numbers and where the corn, where that quote unquote missing corn is. And the very next thing they talked about was how strong their domestic and demand for corn is, just like it is here in the United States. So I felt like I was talking to traders in the United States about U.S. corn when I was talking to traders in France about French corn. That's probably the biggest thing I picked up. And when I talked to a lot of different people from a lot of different walks of life about the Eurozone, I didn't run into one person that thought the Eurozone would break up. I think their biggest concern is that a country would leave it, and they'd have to deal with that. But it struck me that they are, in the long term, very attached to the euro, and the nationalism is not an issue for them right now. At least that's what I picked up.
Last question before we let you go, a quick one. In Ohio, will they get the remaining corn out of it?
I'm hearing not, Dave. I'm hearing that they may get something out next week, but for the most part, it's going to be tough to get that last 20% out.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thanks, Dave. Have a great weekend, sir.
You too. That's Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And he joins us every Friday afternoon on the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson, since 1985, offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stewart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stewart-peterson.com.
Former MF Global CEO John Corzine told a congressional committee yesterday that he was stunned when he learned segregated customer funds held in accounts went missing. Compelled by congressional subpoena, Corzine testified yesterday that he never intended to authorize and, to his recollection, never did anything to suggest he'd approve transfers out of segregated customer accounts. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Frank Lucas began the Thursday questioning.
You've served in the role in congressional oversight before. You know we have an obligation to get to the facts, to address the uncertainties in the market and address whatever laws may need to be focused upon. Thousands of your former customers across the country are experiencing severe financial hardship because of the events that occurred under your watch. Many of those customers are the very farmers and ranchers I represent in Oklahoma, and that this committee represents in the House of Representatives. The fact that their property is missing is alarming and, yes, disheartening. The fact that they've lost confidence in the futures market may have a long-term impact on hedging practices of the agricultural community. And, Governor Corzine, many of our constituents, I'm sure, the 3,000 or so people that used to work for you are watching today also, and they're looking for answers, too. I suspect you may have some of those answers, and so I would like to ask you to answer these questions to the best of your ability. Mr. Corzine, is there a shortfall in the customer funds that MF Global was legally required to keep segregated?
Mr. Chairman, I know only what I read, and it certainly was true on the late evening of the 30th of October that there were unreconciled accounts.
To the best of your knowledge, based on your time at the company before you left, why is there a shortfall?
Well, there are, Mr. Chairman, many transactions that occurred in those last chaotic days, and I am not aware of all those, nor do I have the information to be able to look at those transactions. And as a consequence, it would be very hard for me to speculate why or where that shortfall took place.
Let me ask in a very precise fashion. In your role at FM Global, did you authorize a transfer of customer funds from these segregated accounts?
I never intended to break any rules, whether it dealt with the segregation rules or any of the other rules that are applicable.
Are you aware of any transfers, authorized or unauthorized, of funds out of customer accounts?
I'm not in a position, given the number of transactions, to know anything specifically about the movement of any specific funds. And I will repeat, I certainly would never intend to direct or have segregated funds moved.
At what point were you made aware that customer funds were missing?
As I said in my statement, Mr. Chairman, the first that I heard of the many millions, hundreds of millions, missing was on Sunday night.
I'd like to discuss how a company that's been around for 230 years fails, to the surprise of its customers and investors, and based upon press reports and your testimony, under your direction. FM Global's sovereign debt position increased steadily. In fact, it's been reported that EMF Global's exposure went from $1.5 billion at the end of 2010 to $6.3 billion at the time of the bankruptcy. So let me ask this, Governor. Who's Michael Roseman?
Michael Roseman was the chief risk officer of the firm preceding my joining the firm, and was up until the end of 2010.
Illinois Congressman Tim Johnson also had sharp questions and remarks for former MF Global CEO John Corzine.
The chair now recognizes the gentleman from Illinois for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senator, Governor, Mr. Corzine, my comments are both comments and questions, and there's some kind of a hybrid, so you'll have to consider them accordingly. I represent, and I think the people in this room represent, a large number of ranchers, farmers, small business people whose lives and livelihood have been jeopardized by their investment, which has apparently gone south. My question is, do you have an estimate, and I know you can't tell us exactly, as to how much money collectively at this point has been lost by those investors?
Congressman, that's a question I'd like to know the answer to as much as you, and I am hopeful that there will be effective recovery and reconciliation of these accounts.
I would ask this further. I haven't done a net worth analysis of individuals who testified before this committee, but at least according to any accounts, you're a person of substantial wealth, and I congratulate you on your acquisitions. My question for you on behalf of these people who are largely small farmers, small businesses, co-ops all over the country, assuming that that they're not made whole, are you and other executives of your company willing to stand the loss with your personal fortunes and allow them to be compensated and made whole?
Congressman,
either yes or no, it's fairly simple.
Congressman, I don't think that this will go unresolved.
Assuming it does go unresolved through the system, and it appears that there's a lot that's falling through the cracks, are you willing to commit that you will commit yours and the other executives' personal fortunes to making these people whole? My second question is, Mr. Gensler has decided, and I think appropriately so, to recuse himself on this issue, largely, I think, because of your relationship, and I guess I would say the whole Goldman Sachs fraternity, which would encompass a number of individuals, including foreign ministers of several of the countries in Europe to which you invested. I guess my question is, if he did that within the last several days, and given the fact that you probably occupy in some ways a position kind of semi-analogous to an attorney before a judge where recusal would be appropriate, why did this happen a year ago? Given your relationship and the CFTC's oversight relationship with your company, why wasn't recusal something that was pursued a lot earlier in the process?
Congressman, I think you can expect that I would not really speculate about the internal considerations that Mr. Gensler or the people at the CFTC took. I hope that we demonstrated that in the normal course.
I'm down to a minute and 45 seconds, so I appreciate your response. I'm quoting from you several days ago when you indicated, as the chief executive officer of MF Global, I ultimately had overall responsibility for the firm. Then you go on to, in the course of a statement or subsequent statements, to indicate everybody else in the process other than you who was responsible for this. My concern is that based on a failure to segregate funds, a failure to oversee the operation of the company, and or a technical deficiency in terms of the overall responsibility of governing the firm, something fell short. And at the end of the day, we have, the members of this committee and I have, people who live in the real world, as you do, a lot of people who suffered dramatically and will suffer since they won't be able to buy seed, they won't be able to buy equipment, they won't be able to invest for the future year, this coming year, and what they do, they've suffered dramatically. And while I certainly commend you and in your life history, you've been the leader of a state and represented a state with millions of people. You've been a CEO of major corporations. People have given you a lot of responsibility, fiduciary capacity, and I'm concerned, frankly, that those capacities have fallen short. And that a lot of individuals all over the country and the people they represent are going to wind up holding the bag because of what is either negligence and or commingling and or abnegation of your responsibility as a fiduciary in that capacity. So I guess I'm down to 14 seconds. I appreciate your being here. I also appreciate you're not using the veil of the Fifth Amendment to refuse to answer questions. But I must say there's a lot of unanswered questions that they're going to be answered, hopefully, and I think you would agree, over the course of the next several months, so that my constituents, these individual constituents, are made whole and life can go on out in the real world, outside the beltway of this process, outside the beltway of Wall Street, where people live in an everyday world who have to make a living, and at this point, they are hurting real badly.
Gentlemen's time has expired.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I just respond to say that I share the sentiments that the congressman expresses with respect to the people who are caught in the crossfire of this.
That's Illinois Congressman Tim Johnson questioning former MF Global CEO John Corzine in a House Agriculture Committee hearing yesterday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
It's National Pastry Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1868, Fritz Haber was born, a German physical chemist. He won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry in 1918 for developing a method of synthesizing ammonia directly from nitrogen and hydrogen. His process led to the commercial large-scale production of nitrogen fertilizer. In 1886, Clarence Birdseye was born. Birdseye was inventor of the deep freezing food method and co-founder of General Foods Corporation. On Arctic trips as a field naturalist for the U.S. government, he noticed that freshly caught fish, when placed onto the Arctic ice and exposed to the icy wind and frigid temperatures, froze solid almost immediately. He also learned that the fish, when thawed and eaten, still had all its fresh characteristics. He concluded that quickly freezing certain items kept large crystals from forming, preventing damage to their cellular structure. In 1935, Lafayette Benedict Mendel died. An American biochemist, he published many papers on nutrition. His work on vitamins and proteins helped establish modern standards of nutrition. And in 1997, Carl August Fulkers died. He was the first to isolate vitamin B12. And that's this day in agricultural history. Good afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey joining us for our look at the agricultural market, agricultural weather, is Illinois State climatologist Jim Angel. Good afternoon to you, Jim.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Let's begin, if you might, with where we're sitting thus far in December from a rainfall and snowfall total.
Yeah, if we look at the statewide numbers, we are, as far as the precipitation, so it's the rain and any liquid content of the snowfall, it's about 0.9 inches, which is pretty close to average for this time of year, but it is definitely wetter in southern Illinois. You know, they were wet in November, that's continuing into December here. We got some stations down there that are reporting 1 to 3 inches of rainfall, so quite a bit of wet conditions down there. So far, snowfall has been off to a slow start in many places. We've got a little dusting this morning here in Champaign-Urbana. We got 0.3 inches, and I think some other places got an inch or so. And so it's, in some places, actually the first measurable snowfall of the season. So maybe a little bit of a slow start to the season. And historically, when we've had a slow start, that's all often associated with winters that have less snowfall. So if you're a snow lover, that's bad news. If you don't like snow, I guess that's good news. But
is there any place in the state where you would say, oh, that's moisture deficit?
You know, about the only place that we've seen just some lingering effects of the dry weather this summer and fall have been kind of around the Springfield, Decatur area. There's soil moisture actually looks pretty good, but some of the stream flows and the smaller streams still has not come up to the levels they normally are for this time of year. So that means there's probably a little bit of lingering dryness there. So I wouldn't really call it drought or anything, but just things are just kind of slow to recover in those areas. But I'm pretty confident as we continue on into the winter here with low temperatures and not much demand on soil moisture that and things haven't frozen up yet. So I think we'll still see recovery taking place in the next week or two.
Let's take a look at the forecast coming forward then, please.
Yes, if you look at the forecast, the big news for this, for today and this weekend and early next week is there's a high pressure dome sitting right on the top of the Midwest and the eastern part of the U.S. And so the wintertime, so in December, that means we have clear skies, fairly cold weather, and no precipitation, and that's certainly what the forecast is showing. I think tomorrow it's supposed to be high in the upper 20s, then Saturday night down into the mid-teens, so fairly chilly. Now, get on into Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, it starts to moderate a little bit, and you get highs in the 30s and 40s and lows in the 30s. So it won't feel too bad. It'll be pretty close to the long-term average at that point. And then the 6 to 10-day is calls for near-normal temperatures and above-normal precipitation. So we'll probably see some more shots of precipitation coming down the pike, but no big snowfall events as of yet.
Thank you very much, Jim.
You're welcome.
That's Illinois State climatologist Jim Angel, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to listen to Commodity Week. Our guest is Sterling Lindell, Vice President for Food and Agribusiness Research at Rabo AgriBanks. The Closing Market Report airs Saturday at 11:30 a.m. Central Time, or listen anytime after 6 p.m. tonight on our website. That's willag.org. This is Dave Dickey.